We're learning Parshat Vayeshev. A quick overview. Yaakov settles down after Yitzchak has passed away and Esav leaves the country. He has to raise his children and there is internal strife. Yosef has dreams about how they're all bundling bundles, which needs to be understood because it seems like they were all shepherds. So their bundle, the brother's bundle, is bowed to his bundle. He dreams another dream that 11 stars and the sun and the moon are bowing to him. And his brothers are jealous of him. They see that their father treats him differently. He makes him a special jacket, different than everyone else's. So his father, after the second dream, yells at him, you know, your mother's dead. What's the sun and the moon going to bow to you? But his brothers are jealous. They see that his father gives him preferential treatment. So when they go watch the sheep in Shechem and Yaakov sends Yosef to them, they're going to take it out on him. Yosef goes and they're not there. He meets a man, our sages say it was the angel Gabriel, who tells him they're out in Dothan. And when he's approaching them, they start talking and they say he's having dreams and dad's treating him as the chosen one. And he's threatening our future as the people of Israel. Well, Abraham had a son, Yishmael, who had to be out of the fold. Yitzchak had a son, Esav, who had to be out of the fold. And I guess dad has a son, Yosef, who has to be out of the fold because he's trying to bump all of us out of the fold. He's speaking badly about us to our father, and they decide that he deserves the death penalty. So Shimon and Levi start talking. Let's sick the dogs at him. Let's shoot him with this bow and arrow. And as they're talking, Yosef approaches. They pounce on him. They take off that jacket that his father made for him. And they throw him into the pit. Reuven says, why should we kill him? Throw him into a pit here in the desert. Reuven's thoughts are that night he'll come and take him out. So when Yosef comes, they throw him into the pit. They sit down to eat. And Yehuda says to them, you know, we make no money this way. There's a caravan coming of Yishme'elim, and they're carrying all kinds of perfume to sell to Egypt. Why don't we sell them there, and then at least we'll make something off of this? Why should we kill our own brother? So they pull him out of the pit, and they sell him for a pair of shoes. Each of them gets a new pair of shoes. They sell him to the Yishme'elim for 20 coins. And Reuven wasn't there at the time. He comes back to the pit at night. He wants to take Yosef out of the pit. Yosef's gone. He comes to the brothers. He says, how am I ever going to deal with dad's pain? I'm the big brother. I'm going to be held accountable. And they decide they're going to trick their father. So they take Yosef's coat. They tear it. They dip it in goat's blood. And Yehuda brings it to the father and asks him, recognize this? Is it your son's coat? And his father says, yes, it is my son's coat. A wild animal must have killed him. He's been killed. And he says, I'm going to die in mourning over Yosef. And everyone tries to comfort him, and no one is successful. So he's sold into Egypt, and Potiphar purchases him. Potiphar is the top butcher in the Egyptian ministry. And Potiphar purchases him, and his intention is, what a beautiful young man, he's going to sleep with him. And that's his intention. He buys him for his own pleasures. And God causes Potiphar to have a terrible accident. And he gets so castrated, he's castrated to the core. There's no cure for the castration he undergoes. Now the brothers turn to Yehuda and they say, you pushed us to do this. If you would have told us to bring him back, we would have listened to you. You're no longer our leader. And so Yehuda leaves the brothers and he marries the daughter of a Canaanite. And he has a son, he names him Er, he has another son, she names him Onan, she has a third son, he's not around, it's his turn to name the child, but he's not around, so she names him Shelah. He takes a wife, the pious woman Tamar, the daughter of Shem. He takes a wife for his son Er, and Er says, I want my wife to retain her beauty. And so whenever he's intimate with her, he at the end of intimacy, he spills his seed to the ground so she'll never become pregnant. So he dies. Even though he's a minor, he's all of 7 years old, God causes him to die. Yehuda tells Onan, the next son, who's 6 and a half, he's about to be 7, he says, marry your brother's wife. You know, there's a mitzvah of Yibum, keep the family alive. So Onan says, gee, if I have kids, they won't be considered mine. Why should I lose her beauty? Tamar was extraordinarily beautiful, it seems. So he does the same thing, and he also dies. So Yehuda thinks, gee, two kids she killed. Well, I'm going to let her marry my third son. So she says, look, Shelah's still a little boy. Why don't you wait by your father until he grows up? So she wears black clothing, the way widows would, and she sees that time is passing, and Yehuda has no intention of letting her marry Shelah. Now, she's not going on the market to marry anyone, because she wants to be a part of Yaakov Avinu's family and a part of Yehuda's family. So Yehuda loses his wife, she passes away, and Yehuda heads to shear his sheep. And when Tamar hears that, she gets all dressed up and she wears clothing of a prostitute. Now, in those days, prostitutes used to get dressed up in a way that no one would recognize them. They'd cover themselves in a way that you'd only see their eyes, you couldn't know who it was. And part of the reason was because they'd get hired by their own relatives. So this way, no one knew who she was. So she'd get all covered up. So she waits there, and Yehuda passes by, and she summons him. She beckons him. And he says, I'm a monotheist. She says, so am I. He says, but you're young. Maybe your father already got you engaged to someone. And she says, no, my father's dead. And he says, I'm only going to be with someone who's pure. She says, I go to mikveh too. I keep all those customs just like you. So she gives him good arguments, and she gives him the feeling that, yes, she's a pure, positive person. So Yehuda goes off with her, and in those days, the Rambam says, before the Torah was given, if a person wanted to, he and a woman could get together. If they wanted to separate, they'd separate. Until the Torah came along, there was no obligation of marriage. You could get married. You could not get married. Rambam, in his introduction to marriage, in the beginning of the laws of marriage, says before the Torah was given, you could live a life the way you wanted to. So our sages give us more details as to what went on here, but we don't have time for that yet. When we review it, we'll try to go into it. So she says, you know, how do I know you'll pay me? You leave me. He says, I'll send you one of the young goats. She says, fine, but I want you to leave me your staff. I want you to give me your signet ring. I want you to give me your cape. I want you to leave me your signs that it's you, that you'll pay me back. So after the story's over, Yehuda goes. He sends his friend to pay her, and no one knows her. And he asks, where's the woman that stands by this path? They say, no, there's no such woman here. So Yehuda says, you know, it's not so respectful. We're going to go around looking. It's going to ruin our reputation. Not such a respectful thing going on here. Let's not talk about it. We tried. Okay, 3 months later, Yehuda hears that his daughter-in-law has become pregnant illegitimately. So Yehuda says, our custom here, the Noahide laws, is that when a woman's supposed to marry into the family, if she marries out, then she gets the death penalty by burning. That's one understanding. The other understanding is when a woman would be caught, they would brand her. They'd make a burn mark on her forehead. Two understandings. But our sages understood that was the Noahide law in the country. The rule was a woman got the death penalty by burning. So they're taking her out, and she says, you know what, just before we do that, could you ask my father-in-law, tell him I'm pregnant from this guy. Does he recognize who it is? And she sends all of Yehuda's signs. Now, initially she went looking for them, and they were missing. It says the angel of Esav came and hid them from her. But then Gabriel came and made them available. And she sends it to Yehuda. She doesn't say, hey, you're the dad. It's okay, it's all in the family. She doesn't say that. And from here we learn a person should rather lose their life than shame someone publicly. She says it's up to him. So Yehuda stands up and does one of the greatest acts of all time, and he admits. All people have shortcomings and all people have weak moments. Great people are willing to admit. And so Yehuda steps up to the plate and says, it's me. She's right. I didn't let her marry Shelah, and I'm the dad. And it's what she did was right. She's right, and I'm wrong. She cornered me. She did things right, and I did things wrong. And then he marries her, and she remains his wife. So she has two sons, which will be the fathers of the Davidic dynasty. Now, just like Tamar had positive intentions, another woman had positive intentions. When Yosef is in Potiphar's house, so Potiphar's wife sees that in the stars it says that the great Mashiach ben Yosef is going to come from her. What she doesn't realize is that it's her daughter. They adopted the girl. The girl Asnat, the girl who was born from Dina, from Dina being violated by Shechem. So Yaakov saw that his children were very upset to have the daughter of Shechem in their house. Yaakov said, I can't trust them. Who knows what they'll do to her? So Yaakov took her, gave her a locket that told her whole story, and went down to Egypt with her and found two very dedicated parents to bring her up. If Potiphar was always a eunuch, so then it's an ideal place to bring her up. It's a politician's house. He's a eunuch. He can't do anything to her. And the woman was a woman of tremendous power. And she brought her up as her own daughter because she couldn't have kids with her husband. So Yosef is there. And he's actually serving in the house with a girl that is actually from his own family. Asnat. Later on, we're going to see that Pharaoh has him marry Asnat as a political motive. This is a way of clearing his name, that even the family that had claims against him would let him marry their daughter. But at any rate, Yosef ends up in the house of Potiphar, and he is serving him. And Potiphar's wife is madly in love with Yosef's good looks, but our sages say she had good intentions, that when she looked in the stars, she saw that she was supposed to have a future with Yosef. In fact, it wasn't her, it was her adopted daughter. Our sages say he who adopts a child, it's as though they father that or mother that child. The child is considered their continuation. We see that in a few places in Tanakh. So in the stars, it was considered as though it was her continuation with Yosef because her daughter was continuing with Yosef. But that doesn't happen yet. We're foreshadowing here. At this point, Yosef is serving him and he's a very faithful servant and everything Yosef does works out right. But Yosef sees he's succeeding, so Yosef starts taking care of his looks. One day, Potiphar's wife... Finally, everyone's going out to celebrate. The Nile is rising. So she's alone at home with him and she grabs him and says, I want you to be with me. Come sleep with me. And he refuses. She grabs his cloak and he slips out of his cloak and he's left naked and runs out into the street. And she starts yelling, oh my gosh, I can't believe what happened here. And when people come home, she's like, you won't believe it. I don't know why my husband does this to me, why he brings these people who can't be trusted in the house. And she waits till that night when she's intimate with her husband. She's lying in bed with him. And when they're doing whatever intimacy they did, I don't know what eunuchs do, she starts telling him, you know, what you're doing now is very similar to what Yosef did this morning. She's waiting for the right moment to really tick him off. The only problem is that he finds out that she's lying, as we will discuss when we go over the parasha. And Yosef, he throws him into the royal prison. He gives him royal treatment. And then the two servants of Pharaoh are thrown into prison with him. He's there for a while, and the chief baker and the chief butler are thrown into prison. The baker, they found a pebble in his bread. The butler, they found a fly in his wine. And they both have dreams, and Yosef interprets their dreams. He tells the baker, you're going to be hung in 3 days. And he tells the butler, you will be reinstated in 3 days. Just remember me when you get out. Tell Pharaoh I helped you out here. Put in a good word for me. And so after 3 days, that's exactly what happens. The baker is hung and the butler is reinstated. And the butler is a wicked person. He ignores Yosef. He makes believe like he forgot. And now let's review the parasha and see what's going on. Yes. Right, I said. Right, depending on which shot you go with. Correct. Okay. The Gemara in Tractate Shabbos tells us, Lo lam al yeshen adam bno ben abanim, never treat a son different than the rest of the kids. It's not easy. You will see when you have children, there are children that you have a great time with. It's very easy, it's very natural. You connect to them. Then there are children that drive you up a creek. They get on your nerves. They drive you crazy. Some people like it when a kid asks them 500 questions. And then another kid that doesn't ask him 500 questions, he doesn't connect to that kid. Some people like it when a kid every second is asking, can I sit on your lap? Abba, can you tell me a story? And then the kid that doesn't, they don't connect to. Some kid parents like it when a kid wants to play sports with them or ask them questions about what they're doing. Another kid. There are a million and one different personality types. And the nature of parenting is that you will have children that you get along with naturally, and you'll have children where you have to work on it to get along with them. The Gemara says, "Lo'olam al yeshaneh adam bno bin abanim." Never treat one child different than the other children. And even though it's obvious to you that that child has potential, that child's going places, okay, you help each child develop their potential, and each child has to feel equally loved. But one child's an orphan. Poor Yosef, his mother's dead. Okay. But sometimes you got to give tough love. And sometimes you got to figure out how to help a child and give all the other children. So this seems obvious. It's not easy. To educate each child according to their needs and yet make each child feel like they're treated with equal love so that no child feels like you love him more. There's a terrible story. You guys should at least learn from it, not what not to do. There was a granddaughter who always used to call her grandmother, and her grandmother would say, "Hi, who is this?" And she'd say, "It's your favorite granddaughter." So every week she'd call and wish her grandmother a good Shabbos, and she'd always start with, "It's your favorite granddaughter." Well, her cousin decided to try this. So her cousin calls on Friday. We'll call the girl Dina, right? Dina calls every Friday and says, "Grandma, it's your favorite granddaughter." It's Dina. "Oh, Dina, how are you?" "Okay, great." So after about 2 years of doing this, one week her cousin Sprintzy decides she's going to try it. So she calls up and she says, "Hi, Grandma." Grandma says, "Who is this?" She says, "It's your favorite granddaughter." What does Grandma say? "Dina?" So Sprintzy feels like 2 cents, right? Because Dina was always pumping that line as a joke. But then one time when her cousin calls and says, "It's your favorite granddaughter," so boom, blew up in her face. True story, by the way. So we have to give each child the feeling like we love them and all the other ones. How do you do it? First of all, by treating them well. And secondly, by thinking through with your spouse how to give them that feeling. Sometimes you find that one kid is, you're not capable of giving them patience, so you decide with your spouse you'll give them more patience. It's a balancing act, but it shifts over time, and you force yourself to connect with them. You force yourself to give them time. Parenting is about doing what's right for the kid, not only what's convenient for me. But Yaakov makes a mistake. He makes everyone a jacket, but Yosef's jacket has one stripe of different color at the end, by the end of the arm, and that's enough to make everyone go crazy. Because everyone, let's say, has a blazer that's blue and Yosef has the red strip around the end, but his is different and everyone sees that. And even though they're not little kids, but the message. So Yosef is smarter than everyone. He is. And that's why he sends Yosef to check up on everyone. And Yosef will save the world. It's a phenomenal thought. The brothers see in Yosef the snake of the Garden of Eden. They say the whole world was destroyed by Lashon Hara. And what's Yosef doing? He keeps going back to dead and saying bad things about us. They see the worst things in Yosef. And there's an element of truth to what they see in Yosef. And yet Yosef will save the world. That same Yosef, he has to get an edumacation, right? So he has to be thrown into prison. He has to undergo a lot of suffering to bring out those strengths from within him. But ultimately Yosef will save the world. In next week's parasha, Yosef will figure out the plan to store enough food to feed the world in the coming famine. Yes?
Did we say that it starts out by having a lot of kind of misplaced judgment, and then you see that he has a lot of chesed, and then it turns out that he has quite a good sense of both of them, eventually in more and more of those qualities, both of them, or is it not so easily digested, so to say?
We could spend the whole class just going into that. There are many explanations, but with the 25 minutes left. So, the brothers are straight with Yosef. We often try to be nice to someone externally, even though deep down inside we're ready to kill him. The brothers don't talk to Yosef. They show him what they feel. And Yosef, he has his dreams, which are true. Their stocks will bow down to Yosef's because they will need Yosef for their food. Everyone will come down and bow to Yosef because Yosef will be the world power. But they're not prepared to hear that. Sometimes in life, we destroy ourselves because we're not prepared to hear what's really going on. Very often in life, there are warning signals. And people close to us might even try to warn us, but we're not prepared to hear it. So one of the recurring themes in Tanakh is that sometimes we take actions against God's will, and Hashem shows us how our actions will actually bring about His will to come true. So the brothers are going to sell Yosef to Mitzrayim to ensure that Yosef doesn't become king, and they, in fact, propel him to the throne. Ultimately, it's because they send him down there that he will make it to the throne. And again, this is a recurring theme in Tanakh. So the brothers go out to Shechem. Shechem is a very dangerous place. They just killed out the city. They have many enemies around there, and Yaakov is concerned. Our sages say Yaakov was not supposed to be so comfortable in Israel. Yaakov settled down, and Hashem said, you're supposed to spend 400 years being a sojourner. He wasn't supposed to settle down that way. And that's why things are going to go bad for Yaakov. Hashem's going to make him feel less comfortable. And in fact, what was about to happen is a group of pirates should have come and taken Yaakov in shackles down to Egypt. What Hashem does is he develops it in a way that Yaakov will go down to Egypt, not as a fugitive, but rather as a respected person. His son is the second in command. The whole plan is a process of bringing us down to the Egyptian exile in the best possible way. So it's painful, it's not fun, but it is with this plan of bringing it as an evolvement, as a positive evolvement. Yes, sir.
When all the sons came back, minus one brother, but plus like 12 different pairs of shoes, did Yaakov Levine put two and two together and keep that to himself?
Two opinions. The standard opinion in the Medrash is that Yaakov did not notice, and he thought Yosef was dead. And that's what the Talmud says, that ordinarily there's a gift God gives us when a person mourns someone who's deceased. They forget the person. But that's a gift only when the person really dies. And in this case, Yosef didn't die, so he couldn't forget him. The second, there's a Medrash, which it's not clear if its origins are really valid. And that Medrash quotes that when Yaakov said, Chaya ra'a achalatu, an evil animal consumed my Yosef, he was looking at them and saying, you guys are each compared to an animal. You guys are that chaya ra'a. And it says that Yaakov started doing different acts to check out if Yosef's mazel no longer existed in the world. And everything he checked indicated that Yosef's mazel still existed in the world. And he kept looking at them and saying, an evil animal consumed my Yosef. So you can look in the book Sefer HaYashar. That's a book which we're not clear about the validity of that book. But that book quotes a whole procession that Yaakov did when Yosef went missing. Yes?
Contradicts almost everything. Because they call them animals, it contradicts like that Yitzhak knew and Yaakov didn't. It contradicts like...
Said there's one Medrash, but Sefer HaYashar is used by some Rishonim. You can't ignore the Rishonim that do respect the book. Sure? I think so. I think the Ibn Ezra quotes from it. Yeah. Pretty sure. Even the Ramban, who questions its validity, but he references it. Okay. So the brothers went out to Shechem, and Yosef is being sent to check up on them. The little brother is being sent to check up on them and check how they're taking care of the sheep. And our sages say, Vayishlechehu me'emek Chevron. Yaakov sent him from the depths of Chevron. Chevron is on a hilltop, it's not on the depths. So Chazal say, two interpretations. Either Emek over here refers to the deep planning that Hashem had already told Abraham that we'd end up in Egypt. This was part of that deep plan to set it up in a way that would be most comfortable for Yaakov. Or then the Torah is teaching us that Yaakov accompanied Yosef all the way down to the valley. He walked with him from the mountain to the valley. And that's the last lesson that Yaakov will teach Yosef. We have a concept in Torah called Egla Rufa. It says if a person is found killed, so the elders of the city have to try and verify who killed him, and then they come out and say, we don't have a hand in his murder. So the Talmud asks, why would we think they had a hand in his murder? No, it means we didn't let him leave our city without accompanying him. So that idea, Egla Rufa, teaches us you accompany a person when they leave your city to ensure they're safe as they go, to ensure they have confidence that whoever sees them realizes that they have friends, they're not alone, and so people will think twice before they start with them. And that's the last lesson Yaakov's going to teach Yosef. 22 years later, when Yosef sends Agalot, he sends the cows and buggies to take Yaakov back to Egypt. He says, you know, the last thing you taught me is about accompaniment. And that's the last message. It's going to remain with Yosef. So that's the other interpretation of Eishlecheu Me'emek Chevron, that he walked them all the way down. So Yosef comes to Shechem, and we see that the angel Gabriel comes to help him find his brothers. This was part of the plan. This was supposed to happen. And he says, I'm looking for my brothers. And the angel says, you're not going to find them. They left that idea of being brothers. They're trying to figure out. And Yosef nonetheless goes after them, and he finds them in Dothan. And they start thinking about how they're going to kill him. And so Shimon and Levi start plotting. Reuven says, we can't do that. We can't kill him. Let's throw him into the pit. And Reuven's intentions are to save him and bring him home. Chazal say, if Reuven would have known that for years we're going to be reading this, he would have taken Yosef on his shoulders and brought him home to his dad. So that's an indication of how we work in our service of Hashem. If we can remind ourselves that what we do matters, then sometimes that gives us the strength to do more. Reuven says, let's put him in the pit, and then Reuven's intentions are to take him out at night. Now, when Yosef comes, the Torah omits what happened. Only later on, in 2 weeks, when the brothers are standing there with this prince of king in Egypt, and they start discussing, this is all because of what we did to Yosef, there they start mentioning what happened in this story, and the Torah does us the favor of not telling us now. It's heart-wrenching. What does it say? It says they're standing opposite Yosef. And the Torah gives it as in backshadowing. When the Torah will later on discuss the brothers' conversations, it'll say that they're standing opposite Yosef, and they're saying, we're having all these troubles because of what we did to Yosef. You remember what happened when we were with Yosef? There they say like this. Vayomehu ishelachiv, one said to the other, Aval Hashemim anachnu, it's all our fault. Alachinu, because of our brother. Asheraynu tzarat nafsho, we saw how he was suffering. Bitchaneno eleinu, he begged us. Velo shamanu, and we wouldn't listen. So the Torah doesn't go into details here. It doesn't say they threw him to the ground. Yosef said, guys, what are you doing to me? And they started taking off his clothing. And Yosef said, what's wrong with you? What are you guys doing? Please, stop. And they're throwing him into the pit. The Torah doesn't tell us all that. Later on, 2 weeks later, in next week's parasha, we suddenly hear the conversation. The brothers say, 22 years ago, Yosef was begging us, don't do this to me. And now, that's why we're suffering now. And Reuven turns to them and says, he yells at them, he says, I told you, don't hurt the kid. Torah doesn't tell us all this conversation. Later on.
It's incredible to remember it 22 years later.
22 years later, it's still sitting by them. And Reuven tells them, I told you don't hurt him. You wouldn't listen to me. Now we're all paying the price. All of this is taking place 22 years later. Thank you. So.
Couldn't find a good way
Kol hakavod to you. Chazak ve'emat. So.
I wouldn't miss the tomorrow class or anything.
Good for you.
Have a nice evening.
Laila tov. So, the Torah doesn't tell us now. Torah just says they threw him into the pit, and Reuven's intentions was to come take him out, and then they all sat down to eat. They went away from the pit so they shouldn't hear his yelling, and he's begging them, take me out of here, guys, what are you doing? And he looks around and he sees scorpions and snakes, and they didn't see it from the top of the pit because it was a deep pit they put him down in. And because he has many merits, all these creatures move away from him. But he sits there and he senses them slithering all around, and he's trembling, and he turns so white that as the brothers are sitting there eating and Midianites come and pull him out of the pit, they hear a kid yelling there, they pull him out, and the brothers don't even know it, and they pull him out of the pit and they look at him and he looks like he can't do too much work. And then Yishmaelim come, and so the Midianites tell the Yishmaelim, look, we found this servant here, you want to buy him? And so the Yishmaelim say, we could buy him, but you guys have to stick around so you could witness and you could testify that we own him, because ordinarily the Hebrews own Yishmaelim. The Yishmaelim don't own Hebrews. Who's going to believe us? That they're going to say we're a bunch of servants that turned on our master. So the Midianites sell him to the Yishmaelim, and there's the transactions go from hand to hand to hand till Yosef makes it down to Egypt. We went last time with the pshat that the brothers sold him. But that's a big machlokas, because the pasuk says that Midyanim took him out of the pit. It says there were Midanim and Midyanim and Yishmaelim. So Yosef was sold many times.
Who says what? Rashi says he was sold by the brothers.
Yeah, Rashi goes with the pshat that he was sold by the brothers. That's what the prophet seems to say in the haftar of this week's parasha. The midrashim say Rashi also mentions that he was sold numerous times. He changed hands. Now, Yosef is being taken down to Egypt, and the Torah points out that Yishmaelim are carrying perfumes. Now, Yishmaelim used to do trade in hides. One of the worst smelling thing is hides. Even today, when you go to the slaughterhouses, the lowest job is to deal with the hides, to skin the animal. The skins, the animal skins, they're filled with flies, and they're stinky, and they're bloody. So that's what the Yishmaelim, that was their commerce. But here, Hashem ensured that Yosef would go down in style. He's going down with a great smell. Our sages say that this was a sign to Yosef that Hashem was with him. So he's being sold for prostitution as a male, and he's being taken down naked, and he has to have the fine smell of perfume. So that's the idea. Rav Feinstein writes that even when things go bad, if we pay attention, within things that go bad, Hashem makes things go extraordinarily good. There are things that suddenly become extraordinarily right within everything that's wrong, and that's Hashem showing us, hey, I know I'm punishing you, but it's being calculated. It's not a free-for-all. If you pay attention, you'll see my hand and what's going on. So Yosef has the perfume going down. our sages say that Yehuda will forever, Yehuda paid the price for saving his brother with the words, what benefit? What's in it for us? What do we make out of this if we just let him die? And the Talmud says, what a pitiful way of saving one's brother. We gain nothing out of this. Let's ensure we gain something out of this. This is something to think about, because in our generation, children are brought up to ask the question, what's in it for me? And the Talmud says that it's a great shame to Yehuda that when he came to save Yosef, he said it with the wording of, what's in it for us? What do we benefit out of this? That's the reason to sell Yosef and not kill him. Because we can still make money off of this. The Talmud views that as a very negative comment. When Yehuda brings his father the torn garment with blood, he asks his father, you recognize this? Hakerna? And so the Talmud says that that's why when Yehuda is caught, years later, Tamar sends him the staff and the ring, and she tells him, Hakerna, you recognize this? With the same line that he said to his father about the torn, bloody garment, he gets it back later on. Our sages say when one does a mitzvah and doesn't complete the mitzvah, So that's what happened with Yehuda. He started saving Yosef, but he didn't finish the job. We like to think that 99% is good. Well, if the control tower at an airport would be 99% accurate, you'd have over 1,000 casualties a day. 99% just isn't good enough. There are many things where you have to be much better than 99%. And so Yehuda did, he saved Yosef's life, but he didn't finish the job. And our sages say because he didn't finish the job, he will pay for it. He will lose his wife. He will lose his children. The continuation of the story is an indication of how Yehuda, who actually did something positive in this whole thing, he paid for it. And the end of next week's parsha, Yosef will tell the brothers, you go up in peace to your father. Our sages say for generations, this stain remained on the Jewish people. On Yom Kippur, when the Kohen Gadol slaughters a goat that corresponds to the goat that the brothers slaughtered and dipped Yosef's blood in that goat. The goats, the holy goats of Yom Kippur, are a rectification of our grave transgression of hatred between the brothers. When Yosef tells them, go up in peace to your father, our sages say that was a prophecy, that we would still pay with the 10 martyrs over the sale of Yosef, who would go up in peace to their father in heaven, but they would suffer terribly on the way. They'd make it in peace, but the suffering with which they were tortured to death, our sages say for generations, we're still paying the price over this story. So even though there are many explanations and interpretations as to why they had a basis of halakhic legitimacy for what they did, at the end of the day, there was an element that was cruel and wrong. And that's why we, till today, we pay that price for that. Al Micham Bakesef Tzadik, the prophet, calls out in this week's Haftarah, the Jewish people, Hashem says, I'm not going to forgive you so fast over selling that righteous one for money. And so the parasha really leads us to appreciate the importance of not saying lashon hara, and the importance of overcoming hatred and developing unity in Am Yisrael. Bezat Hashem, on Thursday night, we will continue here with the story of Yehuda and Tamar.